Okay, we're ready to start. Welcome, everybody. I don't know who's been here the past few sessions, but this, I was telling you a few people on the way in, this is the first time I've come out of COVID for this, I guess. I haven't been part of this program. I stopped coming when we went into COVID mode. I never came out, but I'm glad I did. And welcome back to all of you that coming back for the first time or coming for the first time. Just a few quick announcements here. A thank you to Rabbi Zev Baron from the Harry H. Baron Trust for sponsoring Torah for Tycoons. I see over here Mark Cooper, who's one of the founders of this program. I was just asking him, how long ago was it? We're too old to remember how long it was, but it's probably around 20 years that we did it. And Mark, together with Attorney General Phil Weiser and Brad Licht, and a few of us got together and we said we got to create something that's going to address the Torah perspective on contemporary topics, and we did it for many years. You could go back and listen to archives of relevant and no longer relevant stuff as well. Okay, today's topic, artificial intelligence. We named the class The Next Frontier, and that's really what it is. We're entering uncharted territory, and the questions that were posed in the brochure that I hope to cover today is, is it friend or foe? What is it? How does the Torah tradition guide us to confront this rapid and drastic change? And do we differentiate children and adults in this question? How can we best harness this achievement? The Torah's advice on all of that. So some of us have heard the term the summer of AI. I think everybody feels like the world rumbling under our feet and not really sure what's going on. It's a feeling of excitement and apprehension, and I think we are hardly beginning to comprehend what change is about to happen, is about to emerge. The enormity of this development is like, it seems to be like we're on the cusp of another industrial revolution, something, a digital revolution. What's that? And productivity can explode. And just as much as it did when they harnessed electricity, there's something about to happen that is big. And changes in medicine, it can level the playing field for people with learning disabilities and just help give them the tools to to surpass all that. But many people are concerned with this development, the science fiction fear of bots taking over the world, and all the movies you did or didn't watch, they seem to be a lot closer to reality. And more practical, loss of jobs we're going to talk about today. The loss of appreciation of humanity, of appreciation of who we are as human beings. One of the things that we thought we were so unique about was just taken away by a much more powerful contender. And the lack of that appreciation is a danger of leading to depression, loneliness, and we hope to address that as well today. And just generally, we need to figure out how to ride the surf and not be drowned by the surf. How to be on top of this and get behind this change and embrace it in a positive way. So let's talk about the first thing I'd like to speak about today is truly address the uniqueness of man. There's something monumental that just happened here. There's something that we thought was uniquely human. The ability to learn. This is something monumental. This is, an ability to learn from correction has just taken a as by machine has just taken a huge step. But you man is uniquely different, and will always be uniquely different. And as we see, if you take a look at the source book, I apologize, there are no numbers on the sources today, so just you tick them off, mark them off as we go through them. We'll be going in order. This is the beginning of the Torah, Genesis, the first chapter. Man is created in the Tzelem Elokim, the form, divine image. The image, the form of God. There's a godliness to man that machine will never have. And that includes a number of aspects to it. There's a moral compass that humanity has been created with since the beginning of man. There's a moral compass that is uniquely human. There's an authenticity to man, if we can pull away the layers of confusion and clouds deep down inside of us, there's an authenticity. And then there's this aspect of man, of humanity, which is called the lev, the roughly translated as the heart. Now, a machine, which AI is, some tapping into this huge technological machine that can compute faster and stronger than any human being on the planet, all of us together, maybe, I don't know, whatever. It's just computation and filtering, and its advancements that we're seeing today will surpass us, but it will never have a lev, a heart. Now, what does that mean, a heart? I don't mean the pumping. When our sages talk about the heart, they're talking about the spiritual aspect of the heart. It's not really the physical. I happen to have a close relative who is a healthy person today, living with somebody else's heart. So it's not the physical. It's the spiritual aspect of the heart that the Torah is always referring to, and that's the that is where the decisions take place. As advanced as computation and calculation is of a machine, it doesn't have the lev. It doesn't have that spiritual heart for the decision-making process. Take a look at the next source. There is when I searched lev in the Safaria app, it came up 588 sources in the written Torah. Okay, but I picked one from this week's parsha. And that is Umal Hashem Elokecha, as Lavavcha Slavav Zarecha. Hashem will open up your heart, the hearts of your offsprings, to love Hashem with all your heart and your soul. So the heart is something that has a spiritual dimension to it. It's a place which is uniquely human, where decisions are made. Decisions are made in a spiritual sense. We decide, this is a Kabbalistic concept, decide spiritual decisions in the heart. Nefesh HaChaim speaks about it at length in the first shahr. There are things that are functions, human functions of the heart, which is empathy. AI will be able to mirror, as I just wanted to do this over here, Aaron Burnell?
Burnell.
He's a young man who happens to be, perhaps in this room, I don't know what else your experience is, but I had a number of conversations with him. He is somebody who's tapping and actually harnessing in his business. And if you have any interest after the class, I'm going to ask him some questions during the class. But after the class, he's got some fascinating experiences of harnessing. One thing he was just talking to us before is you can harness, you can program an individual personality of a specific profile.
It's like an identity implant.
Okay.
So you can give it imperfections and you can give it similar to like what makes a person, you can give it those same kind of information. So those prompts will be coming from that kind of perspective as opposed to like an overall overview answer.
And he's done this, and he can show you how to do it as well. But we can give an identity to a machine and have it mirror and access that information and act that way. But true empathy, that's an authentic empathy, is something that belongs in the lave and in the heart of the spiritual man, the spirituality that every human being has, and that is not. That is not going to be mirrored. That will be mirrored. That can be mirrored, but that won't be real. That won't be authentic. Feelings, intuition. This is a big one. Intuition. In Torah learning, and we'll get into this a little bit later, there's this concept of intuition, and it applies to life as well. Intuition. There's something that's intangible. It's unmimical. The machine can mimic in a very special way, but that intuition of a human being is uniquely human. And finally, siyata dishmaya, which is Hashem's help, and that is a gift to the human as an individual, and that is something that I think we need to recognize is operating inside of all of us, and these things. As a short list, I'm sure that we can add more, are important to look at and remember that as we enter into this new stage and machines are going to be taking over human function and human jobs, and well, what's the place for man? I think we need to look deep, make a deep dive into ourselves, review this list, and add to it and say we have self-worth that will never be replaced. And it may be an opportunity for us to realize our spiritual self-worth, which is, you know, if all the superficial and functional self-worth is up for competition, it may be an opportunity to make a deep dive and to understand our spirituality. I think it may be an opportunity for an aha moment there. So that's the first thing I wanted to talk about. Is there anybody would like to make a comment or question on this section?
We don't know if it'll happen or not, but what if one of these AI self-realized? We're saying right now, it doesn't have a soul. The Shama Rai won't have intuition, won't have the heart. But what if we're dealing with something that actually
acts that way?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know the jury is out. Will that happen or not? You know that there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of fear of them taking over themselves and stuff like that. And I still say that we have a clarity. We know what a neshama is. The more we focus in and realize that we are primarily our souls, not our function, and not our even a reaction. We are our souls. We will realize that can be only replicated by Hashem Himself. A soul is uniquely a human gift. There's even an animal, which has an animal level soul, doesn't have a human level soul. A nefesh and a neshama. Those things, it can in function, and act that way. Perhaps, you know, let's wait and see. I think we only have to wait a few years between developments, right? But we'll wait and see. But the neshama is a gift to man, and I think. It's like I'm saying, I think it's an opportunity for us to look inward and appreciate more and more what that neshama is. And I think we'll go on some more discovery here. Patty?
Well, I don't know where you're going yet with the talk, but I've seen some writing that AI can do. I mean, there's so many things. It almost looks like it has a soul. And it's able to mimic or...
Right.
Or right. Manifest.
Right. And so it's similar to what Mark is asking, and I think I'm going to say the same thing. I think we can say with all certainty that the soul is a spiritual gift from Hashem, created uniquely for every individual. I think that through this process of having a lot of mimics out there, I think we're going to be looking and realizing more and more what our soul is. I brought a few points of what's uniquely human. I think it's the beginning of a conversation. But I've no doubt that a machine is not a soul. It can mimic, and it will mimic it even better, and more and more and more. But we need to be grounded in the belief that a soul is a spiritual entity, and it's a and it's the core of man, and we'll discover it more and more.
So the only thing I want to add to it is that yes, I get that, and I believe exactly what you're saying. However, it is going to be harder and harder to disseminate
yes.
what is, if you will, real.
And I'm going to get to that. I really think that's a real, that's an important part of today's discussion here is figuring out, something else, Neil?
Well, I'm curious about your colleague over here who suggests that you can put a certain perspective into the response of the machine. So who's going to control that? Because another concern of mine.
Big control. Big,
control.
Big question.
And if you have some sort of political leader who is using this attitude, this empathetic programmed soul, and makes a decision based upon that, and we say, well, there's empathy here.
Yeah. Neil is bringing up a whole other area, which I think we're not going to cover today, is kind of like the dark side. I mean, we're going to refer to it, but the dark side of the potential of this, who's going to control the inner workings of this technology. In the meantime, it seems to be there's a lot of leeway for the user. But at any moment, there can be some tinkering in the back. I think that's a huge concern. And that will tie into our conversation today.
I mean, maybe you can answer to it. My impression of this, like having something that mimics personality, empathy, you know, the whole idea of like, there's not enough people we can put into nursing homes and we should start using, you know, or personal companions that are artificial. I mean,
okay, so
Mark's
bringing up a point, which I'm going to get to later, is harnessing this amazing tool. And that would be an amazing idea, is to be giving people services that they're not getting.
Right.
And this can be done easily through this. So I want to move on to the next section over here.
I'm sorry, but it's not clear to me. What is the controversy, or what is the conflict here that we're asking about? AI is a tool, it's a robot with personality, perhaps, but what is the halakhic question that we're trying to get at, or what is the issue? Is it,
so far, let me go through the class, but so far all I addressed was, ultimately, a soul is a soul, and it's unique, and no matter what AI is going to do, it's not going to be human. That's part A. I'm gonna get to different pieces here.
Is there any halakhic controversy here?
You want me to move forward in the class, Rich? I get it.
Right.
I get it. I get the hint. Move on. I got it. Okay. Let's go on to the next thing I want to talk about. I do want to talk about the loss of jobs, just very briefly. White collar people are in greater danger of losing their jobs. You know, if you have to actually do something on the field, you know, there's been robots for a long time and there's still blue-collar jobs out there. White-collar jobs is about to go through a major shift, if it isn't already. And people are going to, many people are going to need to be retrained. I think Aaron has already changed his business already. You want to talk to, you speak louder.
We implemented a lot of ChatGPT's capabilities, but we are in control of AI. AI is like a, like you said, a computer that can process data, but instead of give you the results like Google in the form of a 27-page, they're gonna give it to you in what they think you're seeking based on the intent of the prompt. So you never have to be afraid that someone is gonna take control, because essentially you're in control. The access to that language model is borderline open source.
And so you're addressing Mark's issue of, Neil's issue of, the dark side of people taking over, governments taking over. But can I just ask you to just tell me, in your business, you did some job shift up, you changed over, you retrained people?
Yeah.
Could you just speak to that for a second?
It helps train. You can also create custom ChatGPT bots that essentially is only trained on your data.
So you took your customer service department.
As an internal customer service help. So let's say someone comes into the company and is not proficient in regards to emergency backup power or generators or for a specific unit. If a customer would call in, instead of putting them on hold for an extended amount of time, what they would do is they would ask Amelia, which is the name of our bot, you know, what would be the best generator for this customer based on what the customer is asking? And it will, based on all of the products that we have in our catalog and the spec sheets that were uploaded, it only uses our uploads as opposed to the general knowledge that ChatGPT is programmed with. So it would use what we have and basically a guide the people that are dealing with the customer over the phone, the best solution for the customer.
Okay, so you see in that example, you see that a certain segment of his support staff is the higher level of support staff is irrelevant now because the lower level of people have that. I was thinking there was an example of some of the shakeup that's happening already. I spoke to a computer programmer who's now AI does his work, but he's been thankfully retrained to be a manager. I just want to point out briefly that there are people that are not able to be retrained at this point, and there's going to be a shakeup, and there are going to be this is the inevitable advance of our economy, and always has been. There's been, you know, the Industrial Revolution changed everything, and the tractor changed everything, and you know the irrigation changed everything. And there's, but so this is, you could just shrug your shoulders and say, this is life, you know, this is it, too bad. I think the Jewish response is, yes, this is reality, but a little compassion. And noisa ba'olam chaveroi, carrying our brethren's burden, sharing the burden. But there are going to be people that from the shakeup, primarily, I would guess, white collar, older people, that are not going to be able to be retrained. And I think there's it causes for the Jewish reaction, the Torah reaction, is to, for a pause for some compassion and thought for that. I just share a story. We have a pasuk here, right? Notice about, this is from Ethics of the Father, the next source. Notice about Chaveroi, sharing the burden with our colleagues. Quick story, in the 1960s, the toll booths on the New Jersey Turnpike, they invented a basket. Everybody remember these? You used to throw your quarters. Anybody who wanted to make some money opened up his door and picked up the quarters that missed, right? Remember that? Anyway. But that eliminated some jobs there. And Rabbi Aaron Kotel, the founder of the Lakewood Yeshiva, told his drivers, please take me to the booth where there's a person operating. It just, he doesn't want to do what he can do to help humanity still play an important role. Somebody wake up in the morning and have something important to do. Obviously, it's a sensitivity. You're not going to stop the tidal wave. It's going to happen. But I just want to point out an important response. It should be of empathy. I'd like to move on to the next piece here. I want to talk for a few minutes about changes to education. This is an important topic. I think it's being highly, debated across the education world, and it's one to take a step back and think about. So I'd like to split this conversation into secular education and Torah education, general education in the schools out there. Let's start with that. There is a big effort, or there was, I think it's over, to stop it and say, you can't. You can't use it, you can't access this, you can't. Now, I certainly understand that because we have no idea how to educate in this new world and how to assess a student's progress in this new world. So as educators and teachers, we're saying, freeze, stop. But I don't, in my humble opinion, it's not going to work. It's not working. And there's this, there are ways in the first level of the infancy of AI, there are ways to perhaps to be able to see and detect that this is not the writer. But as we move forward very quickly, those tools of those teachers' ability are going to disappear. And I think we need to embrace it as reality. And I think we need to realize that it's here. And the way to do it is we need to train our students how to use it. And then I'd like to say it should be used similar to Google search or Wikipedia, which is not fact. It's not fact. It's not fact, but it's certainly an assistive tool. It collects for us lots of sources, organizes, comes with certain perspectives that we wouldn't have thought about. It's a tool, it's a reality. Hey, we use a calculator today, it's part of our reality. We use Google searches as part of reality. An AI running through this material is reality. It is reality that's there, but it's not necessarily true. We need to train our students to look at it as suggestions. Follow up on the sources. It's right in front of you. Follow up on the sources and see what your critical thinking brings, where it brings you to. But use it, and use it as an assistant towards gathering information. I think there's a need to reassess how we evaluate students, and that's, you know, in class assessments. I think there's going to be a need for a teacher to understand what's going on in a student. I know the Khan Academy is fully accessing this, and it's assessing the students' thinking progress as through the choices they're making as it's giving them options, and it's realizing where their mistake is, and it's realizing that their mistake is you're doing this wrong. That's why you're getting to this. So it retrains them again in that way. I've seen it in math, done very efficiently already. They're doing that, but I think we have a unique opportunity here that should not be missed. I think the world of education has a unique opportunity to rethink what is our job? What are we doing? For years we were working on information, training people to have information and gain information. It's there, it's accessible. We don't have to train people for that anymore. By the way, except on Shabbos. On Shabbos, if we're not using the computer, you got to know something. It's all what's up here. That's a good true litmus test. The whole week I don't have to be a Talmud Chacham because I could just access my tools. And on Shabbos I got to be. So those are the true tests. Anyway, back to secular education here. It's a great opportunity for us to look as humanity, as a nation, to look inward and reflect upon what are we trying to do with education in the first place. I think we've lost our focus. I think if we reboot, I think we're going to realize that as educators, we still have what to give our students. It's not about the information. It's about the love of learning. That we need to focus on that. To inspire curiosity, the thrill of the aha moment. Anybody who's a teacher or parent, will the thrill seeing your kid like get it. The light bulbs go off, and you're like, ah. There's something invigorating of that. And if we as teachers can instill that in our students and inspire them to experience the aha moment, machines can't replace that. Machines could process for you. They could collect for you, they can work for you. But that aha moment of humanity, that is something that we as teachers need to focus on. Critical thinking, and this will come in later at the end of this class. Critical thinking is still so important, more important than ever. Critical thinking is something that as educators must be training. And then finally, life skills that are done through our education. There's organization. There's communication, and these are skills that can be taught, and those are things that are, I think we need to refocus. It's not about information; it's about these valuable life skills and values of learning. Now, I'd like to move into Torah education, which is something that I myself am involved with, and I'd like to just share with you that I think that. A lot more has stayed the same because there's a lot more that was, that is, that has always been and will continue to be the focus. So first of all, we still do have that opportunity to educate in a machine-free environment. Like I mentioned, Shabbos is going to be a machine-free, but even a Torah class is typically done, with, put your phones away, or don't have any phones, no computers in front of you. It's a machine-free environment, which I think we have to treasure those moments.
But why, Rabbi?
What's that?
Why treasure those moments? Why being machine-free? Why is it better?
It's like I was saying, these things that we're focusing on, they're much easier without the distractions and everything else. I'm not advocating not harnessing, but appreciate a machine-free environment. You're going to see what I'm talking about here. Let's throw out here just a side note. In my house, we have for the past, since cell phones were invented, we have this thing called DDD, Dad's Deviceless Dinner. Dinner's time, we're eating supper together, there are no devices. It's just humans, and we're interacting with the essence of people. This is priceless, and we have to treasure that. So in Torah learning also, if we can focus without the distraction and get to the core of it, that's better. I'm not saying that there isn't a time and place to harness, but we have to appreciate the time and time of a deviceless free environment. But I want to talk about the Torah education has always and continues to need to focus on it. All of the above, critical thinking and the aha moment and the love of learning and curiosity, and all of the above. Plus, Torah education is about values. It's about authenticity. It's about empathy. It's about inspiration, a relationship with God, and inspiration of a love and awe of God. It conveys the kedusha of Torah, the holiness of Torah, the godliness of the Torah that we are learning. It's not only about the logic. The Torah we learn is aflame with spirituality. And the machine can't take place of that, can't replace that. There's something spiritually alive to Torah learning. The spiritual values that we are learning and the truths that are taught by Torah. And that has to be done through a teacher that exemplifies Torah and is a role model. And that is unique. That's the unique job of a Torah educator. So just to sum this up here, I just want to make sure got to keep on moving here. So that's my thoughts on education, that there are certain things that are not replaceable from the machine, and we need to reboot and focus on them. I want to move quickly to the next section here, which is, I think, the most important. And we've touched on it. Some people are having this natural reaction to say stop and wait and don't use this and stay away from it. And I think that I should say that there's value, and we should recognize that it's important to take pause and think what we're doing before we do it. Step back and evaluate and try to figure out what's going on over here. But I don't think we have the luxury to say, just stop this tidal wave. It's happening. It's the real world. And we need to be tooled how to confront change and advancement of what happens in this world. And it's not the first time we as a Torah people needed to do it. It's been done before, and I think we need to look at who has done it successfully in the past. So when the ghetto walls were up, a Jewish world looked one way, the ghetto walls fall down. How to be a true Jew in an integrated world was a big dilemma. Let's kind of look at models of successful ways that it was embraced. Modernity was embraced, harnessed, yet made sure that it was not being, not losing our core values, and not losing our compass. And I think we need to, you know, when we're forced to confront a new world, which we are today, I think we need to take step backs and take a step back and see what's going on. This world is neither good nor bad. It is our world. It's here for us to filter out the bad and harness the good. So here we have it. We're going to have a lot of good that's coming up from here. We talked about assistance in the service industry, in the nursing home industry. There's going to be commerce. I mean, analyzing stocks, analyzing portfolios. There's going to be medicine. There's law. This stuff that's already happening. We need to make sure that the good guys are harnessing this more than the bad guys. We need to make sure that. I want you to look at the next source over here. This piece is from the Silas Yesharim. I think it really zones into what I'm talking about here. I'm going to do it in English. If you look deeper into this matter, you will see that this world was created for man's use. Do you have it? Yeah. Thank you. I'm sorry we didn't number them. But behold, man stands in a great balance. For if he is drawn after the world and distanced from his creator, if involvement in this world means being pulled away from godliness, being pulled away from Hashem, behold, he corrupts himself and corrupts the world with him. It's man's job to use this world correctly. If he uses it incorrectly, he's doing himself a disservice and doing a public disservice. He's spiritually polluting this world. Mark and I have studied this in Derech Hashem as well, not only in Masilas Yesharim, right? But if he rules over himself and clings to his creator, if he uses God as his compass and engages with this world, and he uses the world only as an aid to serve his creator, then he elevates himself and elevates the world with him. We as humanity have been given the charge and the job to look at this world as it is, as it rolls through generations and changes, and to either choose to go down with it, bring it down, or to elevate this world and make this world a more godly place, a place which is reflecting Hashem's will in this world. So this world is created for us as a background to do precisely this job. This world just changed. AI is here. It's a part of reality. How can we harness it in a way that can be productive and not destructive to humanity, to spirituality, to godliness? I think that the answer to this is, first and foremost, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, the great father of the Musar movement in the 1700s, 1800s, in 1800s, he said, you know, we have 10 commandments. You know what the 11th commandment is? Don't be a fool. Zainish Kenar. And this is really what we need to focus on right here. We need to have the ability to make choices, to filter out the good, the bad, and embrace the good. So for example, spam. We need to be on our toes more and more and more. Okay, there are scams out there that with AI can impersonate a person's voice and videos and pictures, it's in the infancy, but it's just gonna assume that it's gonna get better. How as a consumer, like Patty was bringing up, how as a consumer do we need to know? Can we know? Our world has changed. We can't assume just because it smells like it tastes like it, right? It's it, right? A function for humanity just became even more, not less, to figure out how not to be, right? Don't be a fool, right? Not to be fooled in. I got spammed last week. Last week, I got spammed. I think I'm on my game. They have upped their game. They have upped their game. I gave my Microsoft password to some crook who a minute later was logging in. I can't believe it. I did it. I'm the guy who was like, you know, telling everybody how careful you have to be. I'm that voice of my family. I got stranded. I got sucked in. And we as humanity have a big job over here to be able to discern this and to up our game in doing that. Fake news. To present fiction as fiction is not a lie. There's a whole section of the library. When you present fiction as fact, that's a lie, right? That's where the lie is. So this, what's coming at us, is a lot of fiction. And don't get me started on the media, but that's another piece. But we don't have time to be able to filter out. We know there's agenda. We need to be able to develop these tools. Humanity is going to need more intuition, more seichel, more of that human heart to be able to give us a compass to filter out through that. The next thing is filtering through inappropriate content. There's always the need to self-filter. There are filters that are and should be used to filter out inappropriate content. But we know that those filters are just doing a fragment of the job. The rest is our personal filtering and making sure we are leaving out what we shouldn't be doing, what we don't want to be doing. And AI has posed a challenge for that. There's no filter on that right now, but there will be. And I think we should, to some degree, at some point, we will institute whatever filters that we can build and put around us, and then not forget that the main efforts are our personal filtering. I'm going to share with you a story here, one of the most bizarre stories in the Talmud. Okay, so there was a great Tana, the Talmudic sage. His name is Elisha ben Avuya. One of the great sages who became a very confusing figure. He became a heretic. He is the most bizarre figure in the times of the Mishnah. He has so much Torah, and yet he doesn't believe. And we just discussed that Torah is not just about knowledge. Torah is about that spiritual connection, the spiritual heart, that enlightenment, that fire, that kedusha, that connection to Hashem. And so he only has the intellect, but he doesn't believe in Hashem. How he became a heretic is a different story, not for now. We're living in a time, but it's a fascinating story. But it's this most puzzling character in the Talmud. Yet we find a really interesting story if you take a look at the next source. This is a source from Chagiga Daf Tesvav Amud Aleph. Tanu Rabbanan, I'm going to do it in Hebrew, I'll translate. Maisa Ba'acher. Okay, this Rabbi Elisha ben Avuya, after he became a heretic, no longer was referred to as the great sage, as Elisha ben Avuya. His name was changed. They referred to him as Acher, somebody else. But it's referring to him. So this is happening on Shabbos. He was Shoya Roich of Sus B'Shabbos. On Shabbos, he's riding a horse, which is a desecration of Shabbos. It's a rabbinical desecration of Shabbos, but the story goes on over there and said that he even desecrated Shabbos at a Torah level. He harvested on Shabbos. He's desecrating Shabbos, so he's a non-believer and a non-observer. And Vahoy Rabbi Meir Mahalach Acharov, Rabbi Meir is following him on this horse, asking him Torah questions. To learn Torah. This is the most bizarre thing in the world. Rabbi Meir is learning Torah from somebody who doesn't believe. He's got the knowledge of the Torah, but he doesn't have the fire and the spirituality of the Torah. What's going on over here? How can he do it? The Gemara asked, wait a minute, how? Take the next source. Rabbi Meir, heichi gomar, Torah mipum midachar. How is Rabbi Meir allowed to learn Torah from the mouth of Acher? We are taught, I'm going to summarize this, Ki amalcha shem tzvokas. Im a rav dem l'malcha shem tzvokas yivak shetar mepiv. If the teacher, if the Torah teacher is as pristine and pure as an angel, then learn Torah from him. V'im lav al yivak shetar mepiv. If he's not pure and pristine and holy and spiritual, don't learn Torah from him. And the Talmud asks, how can Rabbi Meir, the great Rabbi Meir, who, by the way, was such a significant personality and halachic authority that he was so prevalent in our Mishnah that he's quoted so many times in our Mishnah that when he's quoted, his name is even used. Stam Mishnah Rabbi Meir. If you see a Mishnah without a name, it's Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir is the one who is so prevalently quoted in our Mishnah. And Rabbi Meir is running after Acher, after he's a heretic, and he's learning Torah from him. How can he learn Torah? It says you can only learn Torah if the teacher's pristine. And this is the answer here is so important. And I think if you walk away with one thing from today, I'd like it to be this lesson to prepare us to confront all change. Because, by the way, this ain't the last mega change. They've been happening really quick, right? From the Industrial Revolution until electricity, I think it was, I think if you chart it out, you see that there's less frequent, there's intervals are even shorter. I think, in the next bunch of years is going to be something that's going to surpass this. In as much as we are prepared and have a Torah outlook and a preparation, how to confront change, we'll be able to deal with this one and the next one. And here's the Gemara's answer. How can you learn Torah from somebody who is not pristine? And there's a verse in the Torah that says one way, the verse in the Torah says the other way. I skipped that piece of Gemara. And the Gemara answers, Kashu Kroya, the psukim are conflicting each other. Loi Kasha, Hobegodol Hobekatan. Here's the answer. A child and an adult. There's the difference. A child must learn Torah from somebody who is a pristine like an angel. An adult has the ability to learn Torah from somebody who's not. Let's talk about this for a minute here. The ability, and this is a very important thing in life in general and now big time, the ability to filter out the good from the bad, to be able to take the good and leave out the bad. As the Gemara says, if you look at the last source, last two sources. Ki asa Rav Dimi Amra Abba Rav Rava Rav Meir Ochol Tachla Shoda Shikla Lebra. Rav Meir ate a half-ripe date and threw away its peel. He took the good and he threw out the peel. Peel's not edible. The next Gemara says a different, similar but different. It says, Rav Meir Mirima Matza. Rav Meir found a pomegranate. Toichai Ochol, he ate the edible parts. Kliposa Zarek, he threw away the shell. This is the difference between a child and an adult. And then we have a mission our entire life to become more and more adult-like, less and less childlike. In as much as we grow in this thing called das is wisdom, uniquely human thing. It translates as wisdom, it's das. I can't translate it better, but you'll learn all the sources what das means. Das is the ability. One of the main aspects of das is the ability to differentiate. Im ein das, havdol menayim, the Gemara says. If there's no das, there's no wisdom, how are you able to differentiate? In other words, the ability to make it, to have that sophistication, to take the good from the bad, is das, is that ability to be mavdil, to make that separation. The Talmud tells us, when does a child start to show indications of developing das? The Gemara tells us, test him out. Give him two similar items, same size, similar feel, weight, and he has the ability to distinguish between the two because he knows that Evan Vizarkoi, one of them is a stone, he throws it away. Ego is Venatal, he takes the nut for himself. How does he know to make a difference between, to differentiate? The beginnings of Das is already indicative when a child is able to make that distinction between useful and not useful, good and bad, dark and light. When a child is able to distinguish between two similar things, he has the ability to say, this I want, this I don't want. He is in the process, he's the beginning stages of the process of growing in Das. That process must continue. The Talmud here tells us, Habikatan, Habigadol. A child can't learn from a confusing character. Can't take the good from the bad. A child, put AI in the hands of a child, they don't have the tools. We need to educate ourselves and our children and our society, specifically in this point. We need to inoculate ourselves and prepare ourselves for any change that comes. Become Balei Das. Become people who can make a distinction between what's valuable and what's not valuable. Sit back, take a step back, pause. Take a look at this world changing in front of us. We don't know what the changes are, but we know one thing for sure. Come what may, we are going to grow in our Das and our ability to distinguish between good and bad. Fully harness the good. Take advantage of it. This world, it's meant to be elevated to godliness, like the Mesillas Yesharim tells us. It's not bad or good, it's this world. Elevate it, use it. But a Baal Das is the one that is able to know what's the good and what's the bad. Take the good, throw out the bad. That's all, folks. Anybody could leave, we could stop, or if any questions, you can follow up afterwards. Right.
And you have to look at the driving force behind AI and these different platforms, which is man, and which is usually business, money, and control. There's an interesting documentary, The Social Dilemma, and it was people that used to work for, say, Facebook, Google, that as they had kids and then got concerned, they were understanding that the way that these platforms are developed to captivate, control, and manipulate people.
Right, so just for the benefit of our recording, I just want to... Right, just for the benefit of our recording, I just want to repeat what you said.
Okay.
I just want to encapsulate, you brought up the point of we need to be, I would say we shouldn't be that fool. The mitzvah is not to be the fool. We have to realize that there are things, there are agendas that are driving stuff, and we need to be careful, and we need to take pause. And that's all part of our calculation, is harnessing what's without being foolish and not being sucked in and creating those spaces to be freed from this. And absolutely. Somebody had their hand up here first. Was somebody on the side? Was it you, Neil? I'm sorry, I saw a hand over there.
We were talking about making choices. This is basic Judaism, right? Making choices. What about those times when we cannot make the choice, when the choice is made for us and made to be so logical, made to be so researched in such depth and such perspective that we are sucked into the answer because the choice is being made for us. You want us to go beyond that and say, the choice is always yours. Well,
Neil, that's the answer. There's always room for our choice. There's always room for our choice. But you are very correct that arena has moved forward. It's not where it used to be. It was yesterday. The Nekudas HaBechira, the point of choice, is going to be in a different place. And I would like, hopefully, raised an awareness today of the need to be going with open eyes and not open AI, open eyes, And to be aware of what's ours choosing, what's not.
There's 500 insurance policies, medical insurance policies, and this machine has figured out the exact best policy for you. You don't have to do any of the research.
Okay.
That's going
to
happen.
It's going to happen, and you'll decide if you want to go with it or not. There are many times in life I say, hey, I'm not going to sit here my whole life and research and everything else. I'm going to risk it based on this, you know? I go to an advisor, you know, and that's it, you know? But I made that choice, ultimately. I'm sorry, back to...
Well, I don't know. I was thinking about we, in our perspective, our perspective, are going to make a certain decision with what we're presented, okay? But there's a divide in the country, and it's so big. The people on the other side are going to make a choice according to their values, and they're going to believe. For example, in Florida, the banning of books. Okay, certain powers are banning certain knowledge. And it just seems to me that the point of control enters into this, because what if those kinds of people influence the knowledge that
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this is back to the point that we've been mentioned a few times over here. Who is going to get control of this? These are questions that are really out there. And there's there are real concerns of what this is. There's concerns of the machines themselves getting control. There's concerns of different parties. There's getting control on this side, or the right, and the left. Who's AI? You know, today you have two television stations in the country. Oh, and a bunch of subsidiaries, right? So you kind of like choose which one you want. Maybe there's going to be an AI that people are going to operate in different realities. We don't know. One thing we need to know is we need to be Barei Das. For that, by the way, as an example, and I don't want to go here, but you know that there's going to be two separate agendas on these two television stations, these two news outlets, and the truth lies maybe somewhere in the middle, somewhere. Like they may cancel each other out, right? Because what's an agenda? I had a teacher, a great Rebbe, Reb Moshe Shapiro, who said one time as a sidebar in a class, he said, everybody in this room was once eyewitness to something that was then written up in a newspaper. Everybody had that experience. Adults have gone through that in their life. And they read in the paper and they're like, not exactly, right? Sometimes if it's a good reporting, it's got like, you know, only 10% of inaccuracies. And sometimes it's agenda driven and it's like, no way, nothing to do with anything, right? We've all seen this. And he asked us that rhetorical question, said, why when we read the rest of the newspaper, do we believe that that's not the case with that? It's the case. And this is a lesson to us of even before this class. Zainish Kanar. The 11th commandment is don't be a fool. Understand that what's being presented to you is what's being presented to you. Be on your toes. As children, we don't have that ability. As we move through life and become more and more and more Balei Das, more Godol, more adults, we'll have the better ability. And we make the choices of how conscious we want to be and how my case today is put full throttle of effort in becoming greater Balei Das. I think we should wrap up here. Thank you all for attending.